Hello and welcome to this episode of the Plasticology Project podcast. My name is Dr. Paul Harvey and I am the podcast host. It is great to have you joining us once again for another exciting episode where we talk about solutions to the plastic pollution problem. As always, I want to take this opportunity to remind you that if you haven't already got yourself a copy of the Plasticology Project book, now is a great time to grab yourself one, because in there you'll find heaps of solutions, great stories, and hopefully heaps of the motivation you need to start thinking differently about plastic and our role as environmental stewards in this incredible world in which we live. If you have been keeping up with the Plasticology Project podcast, then you'll probably remember Lumbani Mvula from last episode. Lumbani is based in Malawi, and he is doing some very significant work turning plastic trash into cash. As a result of the last podcast, some very incredible people have reached out to Lumbani and have actually contributed the PPE that he needs to get the job done safely. Now, isn't that an incredible outcome from this podcast and the efforts of the Plasticology Project? Lumbani, I wish you every success with your mission in Trash to Cash, and I'm so glad that we've been able to give you the opportunity to obtain that PPE that you need through this community here in the Plasticology Project. Hey there, do you have a plastic pollution reduction solution that you want the world to hear about? Well, there's no better way than through the global audience of the Plasticology Project podcast. If you're interested in supporting the Plasticology Project podcast through advertising or sponsorship, then visit the website www.docpjharvey.com/podcast. In this episode of the Plasticology Project podcast, we will hear from Simona Paganetto. Simona is the founder of I'm Plastic Free, an online community that strives to educate people about plastic-free, sustainable, low-waste options for anything from consumer goods to cosmetics to pet care. I'm really excited to hear from Simona in this episode because there's a number of things on the website that I myself hadn't even thought about, and I work in this space routinely. So the website, if you are interested in looking, is www.implasticfree.com. It is a huge database of valuable information fueled by Simone's dedication to the natural world, our environment, and wanting to leave a better future for her children. Simona, welcome to the Plasticology Project podcast. It is absolutely fantastic to have you here, and I'm so excited to hear about your platform and the work that you do.
Thank you very much for inviting me today. My name is Simona Paganetto, and I'm the founder of I'm Plastic Free. And I'm Plastic Free is a world-first matchmaking platform for plastic waste reduction. So we connect individuals and small businesses to solutions to plastic pollution. And we connect them through a directory where, for example, brands can upload their solutions, as well to a well-performing blog where we discuss different solutions about plastic, for example, product reviews for new and innovative plastic-free products, or also latest trends in the industry. And the reason I created actually this platform is that I know that by now there are many, many solutions, you know, about the plastic issue, but not many people know about these solutions. For example, I doubt that many people listening, you know, would know that there are dishwashing liquid that are instead in powder form and that only need, for example, warm water to be activated, or even beauty and cosmetics like face cleansers that are in powder form and again, only need water to be activated. These are great examples of, for example, products that promote on my platform because they have a low carbon footprint because they are waterless, so they don't carry the water. And usually water, it makes up to 90% of the cleaning products, for example. And therefore, they have a bit, apart from having a very low carbon footprint, they are natural, so they have only clean ingredients. And last but not least, they're also packaged in compostable plastic-free packaging. So you can actually compost them into your backyard compost.
Yeah, that's really great. And many consumers that are out that are looking for these types of plastic-free low-waste, zero-waste products are looking for exactly those things that you've just mentioned there. And in particular, what does the packaging look like? And is it, in fact, plastic-free or low plastic, or is it entirely compostable and so on? Simona, how did you get started in this space? Because I know that you've not been active for too long. It's only been a little while, and yet you've already built an enormous online platform with an incredible amount of content on there.
Yes, that's correct. Well, actually, everything started in 2014. I left my promising career in global medtech in Switzerland to come to Australia. And I was living at the time in the Whitsundays. And what I did is I started going out with a local environmental organization, and we were cleaning out the beaches of plastic in the beautiful Whitsundays. And it was back then when I first realized, you know, the extent of plastic pollution. Before that time, I thought that it was mainly a problem of developing countries because they didn't have a well-developed waste management system. But when I arrived to Australia and I saw firsthand what it meant to find all of this plastic on the Whitsunday Islands, I thought, well, this is actually a problem of the world. And it wasn't only until about 4 years later, about 2018, that this became a purely global topic. And so I kept this passion, but initially I didn't know exactly how to make really a project out of it. And so I did trial a few different things. I went out with a third-party vendor marketplace that was more like a mini eBay or Etsy, but that didn't really work. I didn't have the capacity to build it and scale it. And then later on, you know, after pivoting a few times and testing my MVP, I came across this other model that works much better for me. And it's based as well on affiliate marketing. So I do receive a little commission for the products that I review, but I'm very, very thorough. And I always link to studies in each of my articles. So that's what I try to be very specific in what I do. In fact, there are a lot, obviously, of websites that speak about eco-friendly solutions, but I wanted to focus on the plastic issue because I found that there was an open niche there that not many were tapping into. And so this is what got me started into this. And I developed a huge passion for this topic, also for different reasons. Well, the environmental one is very well known, of course, because plastics is everywhere now, and it impacts our ecosystem and our wildlife. But at the same time, I found as well that plastic is also a problem for ourselves, because through microplastics, we know we ingest plastic. It's everywhere. It has been found through research in our blood, in our feces, urine, et cetera, et cetera. So I just discovered that the more I was digging into this problem, the more I was finding. And so I had this idea of creating these articles where I link to all studies and what we can do actually to minimize our exposure.
And I've actually spent quite a bit of time on your website reading your blog posts and information that you have on there. And I must say it's very comprehensive. There is a huge amount of information there, and you are extremely diligent with the research that you do. And so it is an incredible resource for anybody that is trying to understand this particular space. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you so much. Yes, it is a lot of hard work. However, it's also very rewarding, for example, when I receive an email from the US or from Canada, because the platform is global, and they thank me for the work that I'm doing, you know, for the research that I've been doing, for the products that I've been placing together, because yes, it does take a lot of work. But I know as well that there are more and more of such solutions coming out, and I'm here, you know, waiting to bring them together and bring them to the readers.
I noticed that you've recently put on a blog post regarding some phrases around no plastic or reduce plastic waste and so on. Share a little bit about that.
Yes, that was an idea that I came across when trying to help people how to put together campaigns about plastic free. And I know there are very well-known campaigns about this this topic, but some people might adapt them to their local needs or country. And so I came up with the ideas of placing all of these different say no to plastic slogans, for example. And then when I was traveling around, and I was also taking pictures of these types of campaigns. For example, recently I've been to India and I found that these campaigns has actually been used in the praxis. So I took pictures of them and I placed them as well on my blog article. And I think people like this type of things because it gives them an idea on how to implement them as well in their local community. And so, yeah, now I'm receiving even pictures by friends. For example, I received one from a friend in Italy. And as soon as some people see something about the plastic-free movement, they think about me and they send me images. And so I place them as well on the blog. It's a way to help each other and trying to build this this movement that single-use plastic is not necessary. You can have, for example, your reusable coffee cup or your reusable bottle, and you can avoid a lot of waste in this way.
For sure. And that's a message that we hear from many people time and time again, is you can do very simple things to achieve a huge amount in terms of reducing plastic. I'm really curious, since you have such a global network of contributors and collaborators and people that are really backing your mission, do you, from your perspective, see differences around the world in terms of plastic pollution, or is everybody suffering from fairly much the same problem globally?
Well, I think everybody globally is suffering from the same problem. Doesn't matter if you are, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere or in the Northern Hemisphere. And what I found is that people are desperately looking for solutions. I think we have spoken a lot about the issue and it's coming more and more into surface. And yes, people are looking for truly something to implement in the local community. There are a lot of very good projects happening, for example, recycling plastic through those machines that you can implement in a micro scale. And or for example, people that start utilizing and seeing waste as a resource. For example, one of the businesses on my platform, they have they collect inflatable pool toys and they transform them into accessories that can be used, for example, for your devices, electronic devices, or even jewelry. So these are all ideas that people are implementing in their local communities. And these ideas are flourishing. There are more and more happening around the world. I've seen, you know, how they have been increasing in the past 5 years, for example.
You have some very unique products on the website, many of which I've never seen, and companies that I've never seen. How do you go about sourcing those particular companies and the products that they sell?
Yes, mostly it's via social media. They are a very good source of interaction with other brands via Instagram, via LinkedIn. People see what I'm posting and the type of topics that I'm talking about. And sometimes it's even the brand coming to me and suggesting their products, or sometimes it's me scouting them through some keywords, both online via Google as well on the social media. And usually they're very happy to join because, as I mentioned, there aren't so many platforms that promote this type of solutions. So, yeah, it's a win-win situation. And also, let's be honest, the plastic-free movement or people that really care about this subject are not so many worldwide. So I had to be global to be able to find something and build a niche in this space. It's small, but it's growing fast.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly is growing fast. And there's a lot of competition, I would say, in Australia with some brands that are maybe less authentic in their branding and marketing. How do you navigate around that sort of an ecosystem where it's not always clear the credentials of some of those products and those companies?
Yes, this is a great question. I spend a lot of time, for example, scrutinizing their website, their sustainability page, see, for example, if they have any accreditations like B Corp or any others. And sometimes I talk directly to the brands and I ask questions. That's in order for me to validate, you know, if they if they are a good candidate to promote, if they fit the values. In fact, we even published on our website what values are we looking for into the brands. And it's quite a lot of work, but we try to keep it as authentic as possible. At least, of course, we have to believe also sometimes what the brands are telling us. There is no way that we can purely certify, but yeah, we do a lot of research before promoting those brands.
Yeah, that's great. And it is a changing market. People are starting now to look at those sorts of accreditations. You mentioned B Corp certification there, amongst others. And I think they are going to significantly change the way that the market operates in the near future, particularly in Australia, where we're currently talking from, because there is such a push now to move away from those companies that some might refer to it as greenwashing, others use other phrases, but there are certainly some that are out there that are less authentic in their operations. And we need to be mindful as consumers, but also those of us that work in this space, that we are sharing accurate and truthful information about the products that are out there. And it's great that you're active in that space and being really careful and mindful of the potential challenges that might be there.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And always, often is small brands, when they come out with a new product, they really know about the topic. They want to be part of the solution. So they really tick all the boxes. Sometimes it's about big brands that have to adjust, that I found that they still have to find their place on how to adjust their product. But it's normal. I mean, if they're multinationals, they need to adapt the whole supply chain, and that takes time. But I've seen some progress in that space as well.
I made a comment recently to the media where I'd like to see that somewhere in the near future, supermarket shelves are entirely plastic free. Do you think that's a pipe dream, or can that be a reality?
Oh, yes. Don't get me started about this. Every time I go to the supermarket, I just feel sad sometimes because, you know, I'm doing all of this and about plastic free. And then I enter the supermarket and, you know, everything is in plastic nearly. And I think, what am I doing here? You know, but what I think is that they are trying to change some of their products. And ultimately, we will need more push from us consumers. So, for example, if instead of buying the carrots in a plastic bag, we buy them loose, even if sometimes they cost a few cents more, you know, we give that signal to those supermarkets to try, you know, to offer more product loose. And I think it's a hard battle. It's the area where I've seen maybe the least improvement so far in the large chains, but it needs to happen, particularly as, you know, the soft plastic waste is not really recycled any longer in Australia. We've seen what happened with that company that was recycling it. So we need a solution from the consumer side as well in terms of reduction. And we need to give this signal to the supermarkets.
You ever have an opportunity through I'm Plastic Free and the work that you do to work with supermarkets and engage with them in that conversation?
That's a great question. I've never thought about this yet. And I think one of the reasons is that I'm based locally, regionally in Darwin. But if there was any opportunity for me to consult with one of those big brands in this space, it would be fantastic. Yes. And I do have a lot of ideas, you know, what could be implemented. Obviously, we would need to do pilots at small scale first. And but yes, I would love to be engaged in that space. And also, this is one of the reasons more why I just completed a certification into the circular economy. So now I can say that I am a certified circular economy specialist. So I'm looking forward to such opportunities.
And that brings us to a really good point in the conversation here. You live in Northern Australia, and Northern Australia has different waste management challenges to, let's say, the southeast, New South Wales, Victoria, and even some parts of lower southeast Queensland. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges faced by Northern Australia, and particularly regional Northern Australia? And how do you think we can manage some of those waste challenges into the future?
Yes, it's another great question. In the Northern Territory, obviously, we have the issue that we have a very low population, but spread out in a huge territory, jurisdiction. And that creates challenges because there is not enough volume in a certain area, to make all of these recycling opportunities economically viable. I know that the Northern Territory government is trialing different solutions, for example, by establishing some hubs in Katherine to have, all the waste coming from the different communities across the territory. But as far as I know, it's still in trial. It is a challenge in different ways. A lot of the waste, for example, that is currently being collected here in the territory is not recycled locally, but it is transported down south to be recycled in other facilities in the southeast. So these are the challenges that I see in this area. I just submitted a proposal because the Northern Territory has been asking for feedback. Single-use plastic bans that are to be introduced by 2025. And I did recommend, to ban different single-use plastic items because at least, it will reduce the amount of waste that we create locally and we have to deal with. Another issue that I see here is our climate. Because it's very hot and humid, a lot of the solutions that are available, for example, like PLA, bio-based plastics for the hospitality industry, for example, are not always great solutions here because the humidity will ultimately ruin the properties of the products and then they're not fit for tasks. And so I also feel, our retailers that are trying to find solutions have bought some of these products. And then after different months, they have to throw them away because they're not fit for purpose. So we need also to take into consideration this aspect. And I think that ultimately we'll have to solve this problem also with more circular solutions. For example, reusable takeaway container that can be brought back for a deposit or this type of thing. So single-use solutions are not always the best for a hot and humid climate.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's not something that I've ever really thought about before, how the climate might impact the call it biodegradability, I suppose, of the plastics. So that's quite fascinating to me.
Yes. It's something that I've been recently I was contacted by the ABC and we did this interview and they interviewed the retailers and actually it is true. They've had challenges in, trying to find solutions for the cafe or restaurant. For example, the straws that sometimes are made with PLA, they crack. They crack because of the humidity that we live and the hot climate. So it's interesting. And I know that there are other solutions that can be trialed. And sometimes it's also it's the matter of these retailers knowing what type of solutions can be available. And it's sometimes they're not available here locally. Obviously, they have to be ordered online. So it's about buying also in certain types of volumes that would make it worthwhile for them.
So speak a little bit more now on the circular economy, because it's a bit of a buzz phrase that many people listening may have heard being thrown around, but they're maybe not quite sure what it actually means. Can you give us a bit of an insight?
Yes, sure. The circular economy is an holistic concept that aims pretty much at avoiding any type of waste. And a lot of people think that circular economy, it's only about recycling, but it's not. It's about, for example, narrowing the loops, slowing down the loops of the waste. And I can provide you an example for, for example, recently I had a pair of goggles from my son that broke, and that was just a tiny little piece of this item that broke. So what I did in purely thinking about circular economy, I went back to the brand and asked if they had that little replacement piece so that I could still continue to use this item, keep it in circulation, and therefore, having more longevity for this product. Unfortunately, they replied that they don't sell any replacement parts, and they gave me the link on how to buy a new product. So this is pretty much the philosophy behind the circular economy, is thinking about how can we keep our products into circulation as long as we can, and not thinking in solutions only in terms of products, but also in terms of services. For example, instead of having, a washing machine that you bought and then you don't know what to do at the end of life of that product, what you can do is, for example, that's happening already in Europe in some pilot tests, you can lease that washing machine. So you have all the services in regards to, for example, maintenance and over certain years, and when that machine has achieved the end of life, it goes back to the manufacturers. So these are examples, on how broad the circular economy is. It's not just about recycling, it's about longevity of the products, it's about thinking in service instead of products. Ultimately, it's about reducing and avoiding waste and utilizing the resources in a most efficient way.
Yeah, and resources are, of course, finite. There's only so many that we can dig from the ground or polymers that we can synthesize and so on and so on. So it's about a whole of product life cycle stewardship in many ways.
That's exactly right. We live in a finite resources planet. So we ultimately have to deal better with what we have. And we will have more and more in the future with our growing population.
This also sounds a little bit like the conversation that's happening at the moment about right to repair, in particular with electronic goods.
Yes, absolutely. And it would be great if there were more repair cafes and people that would be willing to give their time to repair objects. I'm always facing this this dilemma here because I have a lot of things that I would love to repair. I'm unfortunately not able to repair them myself, but I cannot find anyone here in Darwin who would be able to help me. And so ultimately they need to go to landfill. So if we could join forces in many areas and trying to build these cafes, this is already happening worldwide, of course, and it would be amazing. And on one hand, also the manufacturers need to create products that are fully repairable, fully be able to be disassembled. And this creates an economy where then you can earn money as well on the parts that needed to be that are needed to repair those items.
Simona, I often think about the huge loss that we face both economically and in terms of resources when I think about all of the electronic goods and components that are just sitting out there in big piles doing nothing. So this type of approach where you're recovering those materials really is a good direction forward for the future.
Yes, you're right. And in my course, circular economy course that I just did, I learned about a concept that is going to take more and more ground in the future. It's called urban mining. And it's pretty much what you just said. We have piling of resources sitting in our homes, in our garage, in sheds everywhere around the world. And in the future, we will have to be more streamlined and efficient about the resources. So we will hopefully be able to bring these resources together and strip them of all the materials that they have in order to create new resources. It's a new concept that it's currently being used already in Europe. And obviously you need volume and, you know, you need also economic feasibility to create this type of urban mining facilities. But if you have enough population and enough, you know, willingness to bring these products together, why not? Because ultimately, these products are going to be donated. The resources are going to be free. It's the labor that it's going to be the resource to pay for.
You've mentioned there again, population. And that's something that I think we struggle with in Australia in the waste management space, is we don't have the population to justify significant expenditure on major waste management infrastructure. And now this is a double-edged sword because it's both a blessing and a curse when the population isn't at a certain size. So given that, well, yes, the population is growing, but we're nowhere near the size of the population of the US or Europe, for example, do you think some of those approaches that are currently active and working efficiently in, say, Europe would be suitable for use here and implementing here? Or do we need to come up with other more appropriate solutions given our population size and our economy?
Yes, I think that we need to come to an approach, whereas, for example, in the Southeast, it might be appropriate to have those large-scale facilities, but this might not be the case for regional and remote areas. And in those areas, we need to empower the communities, for example, to have more micro-scale type of recycling facilities. It can happen, for example, through plastic recycling. There are machines that can be used to recycle these products. They are open source, so people can download all the knowledge online, and we have to empower the communities this way, even creating more jobs if possible, because otherwise economically it doesn't make sense, you know, to transport all of that waste elsewhere, creating further carbon footprint. So that's my solution. I know it's easier said than done, but seeing the size of the country of Australia compared to Europe and the lower density of the population, how can you solve it otherwise? And then ultimately, what I always say is we need to reduce our waste. For example, Australia is the first country in the world that has the highest capita of plastic waste per person. That's 60 kilos per year. So this is not to do with the population of the country. This is a matter of, you know, consuming and wasting. And this is something where everyone of us can help. So the two things, you know, implementing projects that are suitable for the Australian, you know, vast territory, and on the other side, reducing our waste.
And that brings us back nicely to I'm Plastic Free and what you're doing through that platform. I want to explore more some of the topics that you deal with on the platform, on the website. And there's one there that particularly grabs my attention because we all love our pets. We want to give them the absolute best we possibly can. We probably feed our pets better than ourselves sometimes. Share with us some of the plastic-free solutions that are available out there for pets and our furry friends.
Yes, sure. For example, there are a lot of toys in this industry, in the pet industry, that are made of plastic. And what I've noticed, for example, with even my experience in the past, is that obviously, for example, dogs like to break down those toys, and then they break down into microplastics. But now there are a lot of new products, for example, that are made of hemp or different other materials, even for example, cottons and other fabrics that are left over from other usage in the past that can be utilized, for our furry friends, and they don't create any microplastics. And when you're finished with them at the end of life, you can simply compost them. And the same is true for, for example, those bowls where the dog might be eating, instead of buying a plastic one that then you keep it out in the garden in the sun and will, degrade, creating microplastics, you can simply buy a stainless steel one and that would last you forever. And yes, it might rust a little bit, but if you keep it clean, that's fine. And at least you buy a product once, but you buy it right. And that's what we find in this niche. It's the same concept that you can apply for all different niches, ultimately.
I use that example because I think it hits a lot of listeners and a lot of consumers. But it also speaks, I think, to the larger conversation that we need to all be having. And there's one that you're leading through, I'm Plastic Free. And that is about waste management more generally, but it's also about those individual actions that we can take and taking a moment to stop and think rather than just relying on the information that might be presented on the package or on the shelf display that says that this product might be compostable, it might break down, it might be better for the environment than others. And so people could go to a platform like yours, for example, and learn about those products and become educated and read the research that you've done, the validation work that you've done, and be confident in the products that they can purchase.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, that's exactly what we talk about on our platform and what we explain. And there is a lot of knowledge that that needs to be shared in order for people to know the differences. So my suggestion is trying to find always the certifications. For example, if you see that symbol has a that product has a compostable certification, then at least you are you're safe that you can use this in your garden. Otherwise, don't do it, because there is a lot of products that cause more damage than actually what they're meant to do. So always try to find those certification symbols on your products. And if they don't have it, feel free to contact the manufacturer and ask them. So it's only in this way that we can change the current status quo. And ultimately, we need obviously also more strict standards from our government and local jurisdictions.
I want to take a slightly different direction now, and let's speak about fast fashion, or rather slow fashion, as your platform describes it. What are some of the issues that are currently being faced in the fashion industry globally? And what are the solutions that you're identifying and sharing with the world?
Yes, there are a lot of things to say about this topic, and I'm not a fashion expert. But what I can say is there are a lot of ways how you can do your bit to be more sustainable in this space. And these are, for example, if you have to buy new clothes, then buy clothes that are made with natural fibers. And this can be, for example, cotton, hemp. If you're not vegan, you can buy wool and natural materials. So try to find materials and fibers that can completely compost after the end of life. The second tip that I can give is buy secondhand. There are a lot of beautiful clothes that have been used only a couple of times just to have a beautiful photo on Instagram or on the social media and so on. So you can find a lot of these items both in op shops around the country as well as online if you're looking for specific high-end brands, for example. And another tip that I can give, for example, is have a filter on your washing machine, because you will still have materials that are synthetics. And then if you have implement a filter on your washing machine, at least you make sure that those microplastics that are shed when the clothes are washed in a washing machine, they're not going through the ocean. And if implementing a filter is too much, you can also buy one of those bags that are available online. You can easily find them via Google, and you're able to replace your clothes. And this way, you know, the microplastic is not going out through the ocean. And ultimately, another last tip that I can give is wash less. And yes, I know it's a bit contradictory or maybe not great for many people, but for example, for some items, we can try to wear it at least another more time and have less washing, because this is ultimately reduction of water, reduction of electricity, and therefore less carbon footprint and less microplastics. So these are the tips. We need to become more sustainable in the way we live. And we can only do it if we can implement at least some of these recommendations. Maybe I can give another idea. For example, on my platform, there is a brand or a solutions that you can subscribe to, and they give you every month a box with clothes, so that they are all secondhand, they're all tailored to your taste and to your style, because you have to do a screening before and placing your criteria or what type of clothes you like. So if you're really into fashion, that's another way how you can be really fashionable, change your clothes really often according to the trends, and at the same time have a lower carbon footprint.
What's the name of that organization?
It's called INRO.
INRO, and that's on your website for anybody interested.
Yes, INRO.
So for anybody that is wanting to check out your website or what you're doing, how do they do that? What's your web address, and are you on social media?
Yes, I am. The web address is implasticfree.com, and all social media handles are implasticfree. And implasticfree, a lot of people think that it refers to the product or to a person, but ultimately it has a wave in the logo. So I'm plastic free refers to the ocean, actually. And it means we dream of the day the ocean can say I'm plastic free. So I just wanted to explain, as I don't know if this comes across all the time.
No, that's great. Well, what a dream that is, to have the ocean plastic free one day. Well, it has been fascinating to talk with you, Simona, on all things plastic free and waste solutions. Is there anything that you wanted to share with the listeners that we haven't yet covered?
Maybe the only thing that I would like to share is some people ask me why I do all of this, why do I bother and so on. And the reason I'm doing this is mainly my children. So they are now 10 and 6, and I sometimes wonder in what kind of future they would live. I sometimes think how we will be in 2050, for example. And I'm trying to offer them a different future, and they are the why. They are my why of why I'm doing all of this.
I think that is a why that many of us share as well. What are the future generations going to inherit? I very much appreciate what you're doing. You've created an amazing resource for consumers, individuals, businesses, and it's just absolutely incredible. So congratulations and well done on achieving what you've achieved so far.
Thank you very much. I mean, I'm no saint. I'm also not perfect. Nobody is. But at least what I tell people is try to do step by step. And it doesn't have to be perfect. Nobody is. We don't have to be perfectly zero waste or plastic free. Just do one item, whatever you can, and everything counts. That's my philosophy.
Simona, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you on this topic and hearing about the work that you're doing. I wish you every success for the future, and I look forward to catching up with you again in the future, maybe on another podcast episode, and we can talk about the changes and maybe the plastic-free ocean as a result of what you've been doing.
Thank you very much, Paul, for the invitation, and I'm looking forward to that day as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Plasticology Project podcast. It's been great having you along. If you'd like more information, please see the show notes. Alternatively, head to www.docpjharvey.com. The Plasticology Project podcast receives no financial support. If you would like to support the Plasticology Project podcast or any of the other Plasticology Project initiatives, please follow the link on the website. This has been another episode of the Plasticology Project podcast. Thanks for listening.